everyone. This is Philosophy of the People with Stephen Bertram and a stranger.
A very strange stranger.
We're here with my long-term best friend, Fakie13. I don't normally call him that, but I will. And today we're going to kind of rotate around a few topics, generally about fiction and its kind of influence on the real world. Some stuff about people taking fictional entities very seriously, like, you know, when people say, like, you know, like, call out Daenerys Targaryen, that kind of thing, like, for being racist or whatever, you know, or being white privileged. It's like, well, she's not real, is she?
She's very white, though. I will give them that.
True. And she did get carried around by brown people or whatever, like, physically. Second thread is kind of about pro versus anti-shipping, which is a very stupid argument that goes on in fan fiction communities between people who think you should be able to write whatever you want, mainly meaning you should be able to write a romance between whatever two characters that you'd like, and anti-shippers who believe that some of these sometimes are bad. And the third thread, which is about, which relates to the article, which is in the description, is more about kind of the plot, political economy relating to fan fiction and fiction in general. While looking at this, I found out about a very interesting group of people. Have you heard of Larrys?
I've not heard of Larrys, no.
So Larrys are people who are fans of One Direction. And they don't have a thing. They're called Larrys because it's Harry Styles and
Lewis. I thought they were big fans of Guru Larry for a second there. That's disappointing to find out Lewis that they're not Tomlinson? Big fans of Guru Larry.
Is that his name? The other one from One Direction?
Close Lewis, enough.
Lewis, something like that. But they aren't people who write fan fiction. Well, they are. They write fan fiction. They create fan art where they want Louis or Lewis, whoever he's called, to fuck Harry. But that's all just kind of a minor secondary aspect to their real obsession, their real belief, which is that they are actually, in reality, concretely fucking. That they are gay together. And it's like an enormous fandom conspiracy.
Yeah, I suppose you can't have that kind of idea about fantasy characters, right? Like, at the end of the day, you have to accept that there is some detachment from, like, the actor or whatever.
There was, I did review some people when I did this academic work before, who they were called Snape Wives after Snape.
Sirius Snape of the Harry Potter fandom, yeah.
Sirius Snape. Severus Snape.
Oh, so it was, oh, fuck.
Fine, they went to school together, they're the same guy.
Yeah, right.
They're both
been a long time.
And when they were fans or big fans of Snape as the books came out, but then Book 7 came out, and they didn't like what happened with Snape in Book 7. So they just went, no, that's not correct. You've messed up J.K. Rowling. And they basically they believed in this kind of extra textual essence of Snape. That was destroyed by that kind of J.K. Rowling was only kind of inaptly channeling. And when this channeling failed in Book 7.
Bam. Rip the boy.
I've got a quote. Da-da-da-da. On December 24th, 2020, I'm very amusing this happened on Christmas Eve, Twitter user posted this message. This is a reminder that you can criticize Shallan as much as you want and her privilege and her racism, but don't fucking criticize her mental illness or suggest that she's too mentally unstable to marry Adeline. Got 35 likes. Pretty good. Who like, if without knowing the topic of this video, you would assume she's talking about like a celebrity or something like this.
Yeah.
Someone who has a public in a public mental health struggle. This Adeline character is presumably another celebrity. Some kind of Amy Winehouse figure, perhaps.
Seemingly.
In reality, they're both fictional characters. But the fictionality of these characters hasn't prevented like these fandom communities from placing these characters within these frameworks of social justice around issues like race and around issues like privilege and so on and so on. And it's part of something which I think will be kind of the main central point that I'll revolve around today, which is the idea that fiction is becoming very real to people, especially in the context of the internet, where I think there's a specific texture to the internet, though it's also present to a significant degree in television, but I feel like there's a more deliberate effort to differentiate there, where kind of fictional events and real events become hard to distinguish from each other because you experience them in exactly the same kind of way. Like people, like, you know, something which happens in a fictional universe and something which happens in the real world are both put in like a Twitter post.
Yeah, you see them through a screen, right? Like you're literally witnessing the same events through the same absolute methodology, right?
But people will talk about them also in like roughly the same way.
Yeah. You good?
Yeah, no, sorry, I just had a weird throat thing.
I've taken a nicotine lozenge, so if I sound like I'm slurring, not like that. I'm not gonna say slurs because of a nicotine lozenge, but if I sound like I'm rolling my S's.
Yeah, slurring, not slurring.
Yeah.
One academic highlight that popular films are a mechanism for communal bonding, individual identity building, and often contain their own metaphysical discourses. And this is something which becomes more and more important as traditional forms of community bonding, social formation, identity formation, die away.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just that we're becoming more and more immersed in media, but we're becoming more and more immersed in media as we're becoming less and less immersed in the rest of the world. As well as kind of, we can speak about, again, like television. But until like the 1990s, 24 news, 24-hour television wasn't really a thing. And even now, 24-hour television is a bit naff.
Well, it's kind of gone by the wayside, right? Like the peak of 24-hour TV kind of came and went.
Yeah, because, you know, they have to actually pay money to show their stuff.
Yeah.
And so the 3 a.m. slot is just always permanently naff.
Yeah. I think what I find quite interesting about that as well is that, like, obviously traditionally fiction was more of an escapist media.
Mm-hmm.
And now it kind of has become similar. Like, it sort of still is. But in many ways, it's also kind of like interlinked, like you say, with the whole like, oh, what would this person like be on racism? How would this person be on like these real world issues? It's like, surely you want to think of it more through the lens of like how their universe operates. Like, obviously, for like the last 3 days or so, I've been playing Pokemon. And it's like, the magic of this is like having played the original like Pokemon Yellow, and then, like, seeing it now, how it is now, where, like, it's literally 3D sprites and everything, it's, like, it's fucking amazing. Like, I've literally been ill for the last 2 days playing exclusively this new Pokemon. And I've just been, like, completely out of body, just like, I am a fucking Pokemon trainer right now.
Like, yeah, no, I mean, that was literally going to be my next point, that a lot of these universes are pre-modern, or if they're not pre-modern in some way, they're weird. I think probably Pokemon is one which isn't that different because it's somehow... Basically, Pokemon is like the political economy of Japan is exactly the same, but also there's just creatures, there's dudes.
Which have magical powers. Yeah, yeah, there's guys out there that you can put in balls and have them fight each other. That's kind of the thing. But yeah, no, it seems like a strange delineation that's happened within kind of fiction because obviously there's still, Dune, but...
like people will talk about as regards like Game of Thrones characters or whatever, they'll talk about like a character's feminism and then being feminist or not feminist. Yeah. But this is like, will be completely and utterly alienated from any connection to like a popular movement.
Mm-hmm.
Rather, it's about like whether they personally, and especially, you know, it's almost always referring to elite women.
Mm.
And whether these elite women are kind of fighting for themselves, favoring other women, and doing things that kind of they've been socially told not to do.
Yeah. And if all of it's inferred by, like, on-screen or in-world actions, which, like, realistically have no bearing on, like, what their actual their personal politics would necessarily be. It's just imagined by said fans, right?
But it completely structures, it structures how people then think about things in this way, right? Because if you start thinking about, you know, is Daenerys Targaryen a feminist? And you start thinking about it in terms of it, in terms of, you know, whether she favors women or whatever, this leads to you thinking about feminism in completely the wrong way.
Yeah.
It's not about, you know, actually like a social movement that exists in our actual physical world. Mm.
It's just a pin badge that you can wear.
And, you know, and because the more you kind of concern yourself with inequality and thinking about inequality in terms of these worlds and how it works in them, the less you think about it in terms of how it works in our world.
Yeah. Did you see that comment there?
Yes, about June 2. I mean, I'm like... Well, because I talked about it last week or the week before. So I don't know if he's actually trying to ask Ben. He's obviously not. Ben, well, it's Ben's birthday. Happy birthday to Ben.
Happy birthday, Ben.
Despite telling him to sort his life out and go see June, I don't think he's going to see June 2 for his birthday. He should have. But I can't. I'm an ocean away, and so I couldn't force him. But I mean, me and Nathan, oh shit, whatever.
It doesn't matter. I'm fine with it.
We went to see June 2 together. And yeah, it was fantastic. I mean, I was a bit kind of... Because I was so mind-blown by June 1. I spent too much of June 2 thinking about how I thought about June. Like, I was too in my head. But it was still a really good movie.
Yeah, you're very in your head about the whole June 1, June 2, whether or not anything would be possible after June 2. It was a lot of thinking.
But then I've been watching June 2 clips and mix of June 1 clips on YouTube and just being like, hell yeah.
Yeah, bro's been on the Sigma edit June 2 fade.
It's tragic. There aren't actually any Paul Atreides Sigma edits, at least not in those words.
Definitely fade edits, though.
There's one which is kind of a Paul Atreides Sigma edit, but it doesn't use the terms, where it's more like a Chad edit. Where, because in book one, that old Percy Jenner is like, silence! And at the end of two, he's like, silence! So they just do that. And then epic music plays.
Epic drum and bass.
I did track in this essay I wrote about reactions when Meghan McCain, John McCain's daughter, posted a gif of Daenerys Targaryen being like, I'm literally her. And it was so good, because lots of the comments mentioned privilege, but it was mixed.
Mm.
Some people were saying, you know, Daenerys would have done something about children in cages because she was the breaker of chains or whatever. Well, you obviously support that or whatever. But most of the others were saying, yeah, actually, you are like her. You're both kind of like, you're our equivalent of aristocratic, like, disconnected, whatever.
Yeah, it's pretty close, actually. Like, give her a dues. I mean, it's better than most kids who are, like, out here being like, I'm Goku for real, like...
You are spoiled, problematic brats who would burn the world down. and then about 10 different accounts were like, is that dragon a metaphor for privilege? The dragon represents privilege. is that dragon behind you called white privilege? Is the dragon supposed to represent the privilege that you ride to work on every day? If you're supposed to be Daenerys, what's a dragon? White privilege? These are all different people.
I love the privilege as a vehicle metaphor.
Yeah. I love to drive to work on my privilege.
Oh yeah. Bouncing to work on my space privilege.
Yeah, refilling the white privilege on the bus.
True.
So on the question of fan fiction being immoral, I think basically everyone, if asked, you know, is fan fiction immoral, you'd assume that you were talking about copyright and kind of a creator's right to have their work be the only work in kind of their world or whatever. And I think this is kind of the objection to privilege that commonly comes from outside, so from privilege, to fan fiction from people outside of fan fiction, beyond the idea that it's kind of like just inherently shit. I think the two main objections is, why do you bother writing this? Because it's pointless. You should write something that's actually creative in a more significant sense of original work. Or secondly, well, authors don't like this, at least some of them don't, so you shouldn't do it. But within the fan fiction community, obviously they don't, I mean, maybe some people, maybe some fan fiction authors wouldn't write fan fiction in the case that the author said, you know, I don't want people writing fan fiction. But this is not what people in fan fiction argue about. Mm. Rather, they argue about the internal morality of these stories, not the external, not the relation between it and the kind of external world of copyright of authors and so on.
Actually, that kind of quite nicely brings me into a point I was going to bring up. Did you see the couple of comments that were like pre-commented before the stream had started?
So there was, I didn't.
One of the guys had tried to just answer the question just outright. He was just like, yeah, no, on this aspect, no, 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 no. But he did bring up the fact that of like the writers, essentially, and that I believe is quite a good point there in terms of what you've just raised, because obviously, yes, they do talk about the internal like morality of the stories, but also the internal morality of the writers. And the second comment was like, yeah, except for the best fan fiction stuff like Lolita, and it's like, that's
so what does he mean?
Yeah, right, like I think he was just joking. I assume that's like just the top of the head.
It's a fan fiction of actually being a pedophile.
Yeah, right, like that's not, no. Like I think directly that is the bad morality, right? Like I think pretty much anybody from most of these spaces would also agree with that and be like, yeah, no, we don't want pedo stories, actually. Like that's kind of going to tar us all with the same brush, so probably avoid those.
I think you'd be disappointed there, Nathan.
Yeah, probably.
But I would know in relation to copyright that fan fiction is very moral.
Oh, yeah.
Mostly, I think it's very important to emphasize that before kind of the 19th century, fan fiction was just how everything worked. Like, you know, some people would write original stories, but they would mostly, like, relate. They'd be derivative of other things. Mm-hmm. Like, even Shakespeare, you know, some of his works were, like, biographical, whatever, like Henry V. And some of them were genuinely original, and some of them were, you know, very much derived from other stories going around. But especially because in the form of oral storytelling, which is how most stories were told until very, very recently, you can't perfectly replicate what you were told when you retell it. And each time it varies. And so this necessarily created basically what we would now call fan fiction. Oh, fuck. Because in each retelling of the story, it would change and alter itself.
This is absolutely going to be a scuffed stream. Thank you for watching.
You just hurt my finger.
You just shave your finger.
Yeah, rip.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a big believer in the whole copyright thing anyways. Like, I mean, as we watched the other week, we watched the Green Knight, right? And that very much is one of these oral tradition folklore stories that only exists because of these retellings. And you know, as the this childhood game of Chinese, there's got to be a different word for that now, right? Like Chinese
whispers. Americans don't call it Chinese whispers at all.
Really? Interesting. They comments, chat.
Oh, it's called telephone.
Telephone, yes. But as we know, what is up? You know, these stories do get changed over time, and even something incredibly simple can end up completely different. So
yeah, and it's funny that obviously anyone who's like, you know, you can't just copy someone else's story, they presumably think that this, you know, they support the idea that this expires after like 80 years or whatever.
Well, which, yeah, whatever the law is currently at that moment in time, right?
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, the pro versus anti shipping debate is very easy. It's very easy to sympathize with the antis from the outside, because basically how they portray it, at least what they are arguing against, is Nazi stories. And it's interesting because we're in very much an era where lots of stuff is problematic, right?
Yeah.
And the people who write and read fan fiction are generally, you know, very liberal. They're all gay, blah, 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 blah. But as it relates to fan fiction, I don't know, it'd be interesting to kind of search through these people's profile and see the ones that support, you know, fan fiction's writer, the writer, fan fiction writers who write whatever they want, if these people also support it in the case of original fiction. Because it does feel like the same sort of communities will defend, you know, any expression in fan fiction, or the same sort of people who, you know, say that a movie is problematic because it has 12.3% black people instead of 18.47%. Yeah, so fan fiction culture is very libertine in an era where both kind of progressive culture is very censorious, and culture in general is very censorious. Do you see that the BBFC, the people who rate movies in the UK and whatever, have done like a recent review of how they rate movies, and they're further cracking down on nudity.
Really?
Yeah, and it was after a public consultation. So it's basically coming from the public that they're going to do that.
Didn't really feel like there was much of a problem with nudity at the moment. Seems fairly... Yeah,
like, it's like, you know, you used to have one boob and a 12A, now you get zero boobs.
Yeah, 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 this is true. I remember. There's many a film I would watch as a young boy.
Exactly, one boob in.
Hell yeah. What am I thinking of? I'm thinking of a film, Cop... It wasn't Naked Gun, was it? Naked Gun probably had boobs in it.
Do you mean Sharon Stone one?
Maybe.
The one where she crosses and uncrosses her legs?
No. Okay. No. Was it maybe Police Academy? I don't know. Anyways, but yeah.
I think we're not quite old enough, but for people who are slightly older, there was a thing where if you repeatedly rewound a tape over a particular area, particular scene, it would like wear out.
So yes,
there would be VHS tapes that you'd plug in, and then over like the one boob scene,
it would just be pixelated.
Yeah, yeah. Rewound like hundreds of times over that.
Stretch the tape. Hell yeah, dude. Hell yeah.
I think it's pretty clear why fan fiction writers are. Well, fan fiction fans are reluctant to be censorious because I think fan fiction has the highest ratio of media producers to media consumers. Basically, if you read fan fiction, especially if you're a dedicated fan fiction reader, who are the people who make these arguments online, you've almost certainly also written fan fiction.
Yeah, I would imagine
Some great...
I'd love in the comments.
If anyone needs to see one boob... Bob D. Bede has some good suggestions for you.
Yeah.
As in, you know, everyone that writes fan fiction, everyone that reads fan fiction is also going to write fan fiction because why not? Even if you don't publish it, you know, you may as well write it because it's an incredibly low barrier to entry. And if you do decide to publish it, you can be reassured that it won't be the shittest thing out there. There'll always be something worse.
Yeah.
I remember looking up the longest work of literature that exists, which is someone's fan fiction. I think it's been beaten by someone else's, actually original fiction recently. But I was very curious because I wanted to read the first chapter and the last chapter to see how he'd improved and changed his style. But unfortunately, it's very much that thing that, you know, you do improve the more you write, but only in reference to actually getting feedback and implementing that feedback. And this person, you know, compared to the words, number of words he wrote, the amount of attention, the work, like constructive attention the work received, instead of people like me just looking it up because it's the longest work ever, was very low. And I think even the stuff that existed, he didn't care about. And so his first chapter and then his last chapter, 10 million words later, were basically exactly the same.
I was imagining that was going to be the case, or like that even if he did have some constructive criticism, he was incredibly resistant to take it. Or, you know, I've seen this many a time where like somebody will come along and be like, oh, hey, just in regards to your writing style, maybe you could look at like implementing this, that, the other. And the person will just be like, no, fuck you. This is my story. You do not tell me how to write my story. Even if it is in somebody else's universe, like, you're just not allowed to do that. And it's like, okay, well, I mean, I'm trying to help you, but whatever.
Yeah, I mean, and lots of fanfiction writers do massively improve, which does then lead to a problem where they want to revise their earlier work because they're so much better now. But this just leads them to get into a cycle of never finishing everything, which is, of course, also a massive problem generally in fanfiction.
Or they end up getting actually hired by someone as a real writer. And
they just grow up.
Yeah, yeah, greener pastures.
I was reading a really great fanfiction, I don't know, 2 years ago or something. Probably the last one I really got into. Because I haven't really read any in the past few years. But she stopped updating because she went to college. Which gets to the next point I wanted to say, which is that a shocking number of fanfiction authors and fans are children.
Yes.
And if they're not children right now, they almost certainly started reading and writing fanfiction when they were children.
I mean, my earliest recollection of fanfiction as anything was you sending me a Team Fortress 2 fanfiction.
I don't remember this, but...
You don't remember it?
No, no.
I believe the central yes.
Hell yeah.
I believe the central premise was that that Scout wanted to fuck Spy.
Okay, yeah.
Or the other way around. Even though technically they're related in lore. But
no,
maybe it was before.
Not his dad. It's just his mom's I wouldn't even call him
friend.
Like, he's just a guy. I don't think he dates, you know. He's busy spying.
Yeah, true.
HG asks if you're missing out by not reading fanfiction. Yeah, I guess. In the sense that there's obviously great stuff out there, but because just by law of numbers, right? But the thing is finding it.
Yeah.
So, yes, you're missing out, but the effort you have to put in not to miss out is probably not worth it.
I personally don't interact. It's fine.
You don't
it's
read
okay.
books, though, so it's like...
I do. Mate, what are you talking about? I don't read books. I'll get all my books right now.
All your unread books in your room.
Yeah. All of my perfectly spined books. I mean, I keep books on the bedside table if I ever had the urge.
If the electricity goes off.
Yeah. True. If the Pokemon all pass out at the same time.
Yeah, and it's interesting because it's kind of the place where it's most directly driven by children, pace of media, because obviously there's media which is mostly consumed by children on television and so on, but they don't get feedback directly from children, really. The other place where kind of it's directly children driven is kind of like child YouTube. But even in that case, child YouTube is not normally done by children. They much prefer to watch adults act like babies rather than babies act like babies. Or we think so, anyway.
I would agree with that estimation. Like most of what my children watch is like adults acting like children.
Yeah.
It's strange. It's like they'll be doing like fake reporting on like things that happen in like Roblox or whatever. It's like none of what they're saying is real, but they trick kids into believing it is. It's strange.
They tell like, you know, more epic stuff.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, oh, did you know in Roblox, if you pick up this special block and hit someone with it, they will die in real life? And it's like,
wow, I didn't know that. It's good to know, though.
Yeah.
Can fiction be immoral? If we make the situation sufficiently ridiculous, then I'm sure we'd all eventually agree. You know, for instance, like, if there was a block in Roblox that when you hit someone with it, they were immediately killed, I think it would be immoral for Roblox to continue to exist in such a state. The example I put in my notes was about someone picking up a book, which when you start reading it, immediately kills you. But whether this can extend to any practical work is not really clear. The point, however, is that if it is wrong, if fiction is wrong, it's wrong for the sake of things which happen to people in the real world, not for the sake of what happens to fictional characters.
I think the perfect example of that really is like manga, right? Like horrific things happen in manga, but for whatever reason, whether it be the Japanese or worldwide audiences, they aren't as bothered by it.
Well, clearly anime is degenerate, so actually that doesn't prove a point.
I guess.
I'm just joking. That's just something we've all said. I don't believe it. I think anime and manga are all the same.
Like if you look at like Berserk, like some of the horrific things that happen in, say, Berserk, like Nobody seems to bat an eye at that, but like Western fiction is much, much tamer. I don't know whether it's the expectations of the reader, whether it's they go seeking this out, or whether it's a case of, yeah, just it is more acceptable.
Yeah, the kind of alleged position of the antis is that they're concerned with bad things in fiction affecting the real world. But I think in large parts, this is like a cover.
Yeah, yeah.
The inciting incident for me deciding to write this whole thing up was someone on Reddit Ask Philosophy, who they were attempting to give an account of the anti-position by imagining a situation where someone went into, from our world, like went through a portal into another causally disconnected world and did terrible things to people. I won't say what those terrible things are, but there's just the one thing people always immediately go to here, and it is that. With the point that this was meant to be analogous to the situation in fan fiction. But this is obviously, really obviously, not a concern about what happens in our world, but what happens to fictional characters. The exact manner in which fictional entities exist, or more aptly don't exist, is disputed. But it's certainly the case that they're not concrete. They're not concrete entities, as in they're not causally effective. You know, you can't be immoral to them. They can't be immoral to you. If they exist, they don't exist how I or you exist. Even if we imagine that everything that is possible is real, in the sense of David Lewis's modal realism, which we've discussed previously, I think, in two different episodes of this show, there's still no moral question here. Because if everything, as still no moral question as it relates to fiction, as if everything that is possible is real, any particular person, any particular world writing a story doesn't bring that story into existence in this possible world. Rather, the world in which those events took place, if they weren't impossible, always did exist, or at least was not brought into being by anything anyone did in this world. For this view to work, you'd have to have some bizarre kind of universe privilege solipsism where our world is real, but also the acts of the people in this world can create other worlds when they create fiction. But there's literally no reason to believe that.
No. I mean, it's like the whole, like, every decision you make could potentially split the universe into two potential universes, right? I mean, that has more, like, actual grounds in reality of, like, yeah, what if you did just choose the other way? Whereas, like, oh, I've written a thing, therefore it exists in some, like, pocket dimension. Like, okay, find the pocket dimension then. Like,
yeah, I mean, it's, yeah.
Like, one is linked to time, the other's linked to, like, flights of fancy, and I don't know.
Yeah, many worlds is probably true. But it also doesn't matter, really.
No, yeah, because without the ability to hop between them.
Yeah, and the point is normally with these things that they're necessarily causally disconnected, because otherwise they aren't actually separate.
Yeah.
The other kind of side to this whole thing, as kind of the antis come up with a lot of bullshit, the pro shippers also come up with a lot of bullshit. Basically, they have the idea that the whole anti-shipper movement is basically an excuse for harassment.
And he brought up a really good point there, actually. The characters can't think, therefore they don't exist. Which, yes. I know it's obviously just a parody of the phrase, but obviously if they rely on your brain to think, yeah, they're within your brain, right?
Yeah, and people will do the thing where it's like, well, aren't people in my dreams real? Because, you know, they
yep. Your brain, their face.
They seem to act separately from me, and it's like, no, that's just you're tricking yourself into believing
that.
It's all you, buddy. So kind of pro-shippers accuse antis of basically being like an harassment thing. But when I was looking this up, the evidence is really weak. And the biggest example turned out to be a complete hoax. Like someone was like mailing themselves razor blades or whatever, you know, like that kind of thing.
Damn, we checked the postage and they're coming from the post box on your street. That's crazy.
The dispute between pro and antis around the actual fiction is unsurprisingly framed in a stupid way, where pro-shippers will have the view that fiction affects reality, while pro-shippers will have the view that fiction cannot affect reality, while antis will have the idea that fiction can affect reality. And obviously that's a stupid way to think about it.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to me because like fiction, the reality of that would be somewhere between the two, right? Like
fiction does affect reality, but the question is it any significant effect?
Yeah.
And is that effect negative? Because it's not, because obviously the kind of point that antis want to make is
like
that
Hitler's fiction really affected reality. Yours, however, probably not so much, right? Like,
because what the antis want to argue is that if you take, you know, a violent work or whatever, which portrays violence positively, this will lead to people becoming violent or whatever. This is the frame. But if fiction does have negative effects, it's not necessarily, there's no reason to think it's straightforward, clearly connected to like what in the media is portrayed as cool.
Mm.
Especially because people will, you know, idolize villains and so on. People will really like the stuff which is portrayed as not cool, as negative. Bad.
And
so on. Jesus was an NPC. I went into a T-pose yesterday. I'm beginning to wonder if I'm an NPC.
Jesus did do the ultimate T-pose. That we can, true. Nobody can deny that.
The thing is, everyone that's watching this and isn't speaking on it is actually an NPC.
Let's not start that rabbit hole. Let's not get into Sneeko territory. Oh, fuck.
Dead internet. The thing is, I don't think I've said this in stream, but recently the numbers of viewers that we've been getting have been completely off the charts. But just because we're getting Twitter botted, like all videos on Twitter now get like 50 free viewers, basically.
We love our bots.
So actually, yeah, probably at the moment, and for most of the streams, between like 40 to 60% of the viewers had been not real.
Which was true.
Everyone in chat is real, so that's positive. But it's not really surprising, is it, that this kind of very complicated semi-metaphysical debate about fiction affecting reality, the conversation about it online, which is primarily driven by children and people who spend a lot of time talking to children and arguing with children, it's kind of a surprise that it's not even worse. It's a surprise that there's even like two coherent sides with anything to say to each other, as opposed to just kind of like screaming into the void.
I mean, this was always my thing as a kid. Like, I feel like I was far more productive on the internet as a kid. Whereas now it's kind of like, I'll have like maybe one or two comments where it's like a genuine interaction. Then third person shows up and I'm just like 2 weeks later, be it like trying to correct you on like a stupid grammatical error. So you're just like, yeah, fuck you, dude. Like, no,
we're not doing this. I still post in a forum where there's like 800 members. I think that's a good place.
That's a pretty good place, yeah. I think like as much shit as Discord gets, at least it's usually like a solid group of like people that can have a genuine interaction. Like, to give it its dues, like obviously there's the smaller ones in which people do bad things, but we don't worry about that.
I did make one note on June 2 here, which is that it was a very not horny film. I think there was one kiss in it.
Hmm.
And obviously Fade was meant to fuck the Bene Gesserit, but they showed like horrible graphic violence of him murdering those women, but then cut away before he fucked one, which is generally how kind of movie culture especially works now, where any amount of violence is all right, but sex just doesn't exist. To kind of go into structural economic questions, it was interesting. There's an interesting difference between the two biggest fanfiction websites, which is fanfiction.net and Archive of Our Own. Fanfiction.net was like semi-commercial, and it was basically like run and owned by a guy. And it tried to like make money with advertising, though I don't think it was very successful in doing that. And this place was at least moderately censorious. Especially they banned completely real person fiction from there, which is what you'd expect. And officially kind of everything which would be like NC-17, like the top American rating beyond mature, just is allegedly not allowed on there, though. If you go on there, you'll find plenty of fucked stuff, because I think they're just bothered to stop bothering trying to actually delete stuff.
Moderation costs money or tolls.
Yes. Well, Archive of Our Own is run as like a charity, its own kind of, as charities are owned by fanfiction people. And they do stuff where they like legally defend fan fiction and stuff, which they call Transformers Works.
Going to be my point about like copyright, like transformative works and fair use. It seems to be covered under that. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there.
Yeah, no, I started reading chat and giggling.
I enjoyed the Huff Proppers.
But yeah, Archive of Our Own doesn't censor anything. The only time they censor something is when, well, in the case that they think they'd get a government request to take it down, and they have a strong reason to think so. And then if it does actually violate a law. But basically, if they had their own way, they would just let literally everything go on there. So you can't post. The one big thing that you're not allowed to, in the early days of fan fiction, there was a, not the early days, because it's been around since the 1980s, but the early days of online fanfiction. June is a metaphor for boobs. So true.
Those students.
What was I saying?
That's been around since the 1980s.
Internet fanfiction. People would do the things where they would have characters in the stories read the books. Like, you know, obviously prior, like reading ahead, basically, like the character's fictionally reading ahead. And people would just, instead of like being like, you know, they're now reacting to chapter three, go read chapter three if you need to remind yourself and go back here. They would literally just post the section that the characters were reading. And this was like obviously an enormous violation of copyright.
Yeah.
And this became so common that on fanfiction.net they just banned the whole genre. Like, even if you didn't actually literally do that, if you just did, you know, in the reasonable way of, you know, not including those sections.
Yeah.
But recently on Archive of Our Own, people have been doing that again with, but, you know, discluding the actual sections of it.
I'm sure I'd read a few of these, like, to the point where, like, I thought I'd read a book and then, like, later found out that I'd actually just read one of these types of fan fictions.
Yeah, I feel like you were our age. Even if you didn't get into fan fiction, you did, like, accidentally read a lot of it.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely happened a few times. Like, I remember when I was a kid, like, finding out about, like, brainwashing on, like, some fucking cartoon or something, going and Googling it, and then printing off, like, an actual research document from my grandma's computer about neuro-linguistic programming. I was, like, 7 years old. Well, because I wanted to have it for later. It was a big document. I wasn't reading it all in one night. My grandma got mad with me, not because of the context, but because of the printing. Yeah.
Which at the time was obviously worth more than gold.
Yeah, it was fucking expensive.
And probably
no pocket money that week.
Yes. Yeah, and it is interesting in the kind of political economic context that if we're thinking about, we've rejected the idea that something can be wrong because it's done to fictional characters, because they're completely separate from us. They live in a completely different world. How is it that we could own them then? How can we have a copyright over the idea of these characters if we have this idea that they're completely separate from us? And I think basically there isn't really any strong philosophical defense there. The only defense there is kind of the pragmatic defense of we need some level of copyright because otherwise people wouldn't bother to make things. If they weren't able to then be the kind of primary person that profits from it. And we're not exactly living in an era where most authors are like really well off. We're actually living in a situation where like a very few authors ball the fuck out. And then the vast majority of authors earn like less than minimum wage.
I mean, I find it really interesting. Like, say we talked about Harry Potter before. It's like Harry Potter's copyright is less so much about like, because obviously there was like the old Harry Potter like parody books. Do you remember those? Like the Barry Trotter? Like, no, I remember seeing those regularly as a kid in Waterstones, and I'm assuming they're still kicking around somewhere.
Yeah.
So like, obviously you change like one letter, and I mean obviously the content of the stories is going to be vastly
different. Yeah, I mean, it's funny that
with like Barry Trotter sat on the bog, Barry Trotter had a great frog, something like that.
Yeah.
So it's like it's completely different. But like the copyright around Harry Potter like today purely seems to be around like the imagery, like the aesthetic of like
the world.
Like Hogwarts legacy. Like it has very little, if anything at all, to do with Hogwarts. It's like most of it, it's like the fucking glasses and the little like lightning bolt. And it's like, but you don't own those. Like anybody could in theory produce a fucking purse with some glasses and a lightning bolt. It's like good luck proving that in court.
With the Rings of Power, basically the Lord of the Rings copyright owners were putting it out for kind of, whoever, you know, go try and give us an offer for what you want to make and we will accept one of them. And what HBO actually suggested was just to make the Lord of the Rings movies again. But like,
I mean, why not double dip, right?
Well, like, a TV show version, but just exactly the events of the three books because they own the copyright to do it. But the copyright owners were like, no. I think that could have been cool. I'm not against remakes.
It could have been. But, I mean
granted, yeah. I'm ideologically against remakes, but that's only because they don't remake things I like.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, but it's like, if you had, like, Lord of the Rings with, like, modern CGI, I guess that could be kind of cool for people who like Lord of the Rings, right? Like, that's... Yeah.
Brandon Sanderson recently had the biggest Kickstarter ever, which is especially interesting because we feel like Kickstarter is, like, semi-dead these days. Mm. But, yeah, he made, like, $18 million or something off that. Obviously, you know, he probably got, like, 20% of that. But yeah, bro balled out.
And that was for a book project.
Yeah, that was Brandon Sanderson's a machine. And basically during COVID, he accidentally wrote an extra 4 books. And so this Kickstarter was, yeah, for like supply and distribution for these 4 additional books he wrote.
How much did he ask for? Like, surely not 18 million.
Brandon Sanderson...
I'm going to guess like 500k to a mil.
Surprise. 4 new secret novels. I think there maybe wasn't a minimum at all, because it doesn't say.
Yeah, I wouldn't imagine like the distribution costs being more than a million.
Oh, 1 million, apparently.
Okay.
And wrong. It didn't raise 18 million, it raised 41.
Jesus fucking Christ.
I think Targaryen is bad. It's bad. I hope he's not Marx.
Owned.
I was playing Victoria 3 today, which I will soon be playing on TIR with Jean. And Karl Marx did become president of the UK.
Hell yeah, dude.
And then he, like, invaded Albania or something.
Rip.
He didn't even make the UK communist. They just went, like, democratic. Got rid of the monarchy.
That's a good start, though. That's progress.
We are just now getting down to the random notes I left at the bottom. There's some good stuff in here. One thing I was noting was that antis... in large parts emerged out of contemporary social media structure, wherein people can't really separate into communities. Instead, everything is just in everyone's shit. Mm. Like on LiveJournal, LiveJournal was separated into communities where you just wouldn't see other people's stuff unless you like went and searched for it. And lots of these things, places would be locked down, so you couldn't even get into there if you wanted to. Well, now on Twitter, if you tweet something in your like insular little community, it can get picked up just by one person from outside of it because of the whole structure of retweeting and quote tweeting. And then someone will be like, look at this bitch. And then a million people that hate you have now suddenly seen your stuff.
Yeah.
So antis and pros kind of came out of this structure where they weren't able to like just separate from each other and be like, well, you do your weird fucked up shit over there and we'll just write normal stuff over here. But rather they were constantly into each other's shit, which led to a lot of conflict. But then on the other hand, this article I was reading was also noting that in cases where they were allowed to separate and they didn't see much of each other, this also led to radicalization.
Mm.
Because, especially because, you know, the other group, instead of being a group you'd frequently interact with, would become like a boogeyman.
I love being 7 on the internet and just being like, oh, that guy over there is going to kill me. Oh, fuck.
I'm being radicalized by Harry Potter fanfiction.
Yeah.
We're going to become a Harry Potter terrorist.
Oh, God. Snape's going to do really bad shit now. Oh, no. Yeah, that's crazy.
One other thing was thinking about fan fiction in terms of being like high-low culture, in the sense that fan fiction, I think, is very admirable because, you know, everyone that creates stuff is admirable. And of any community, the fanfic community is the one which is the most kind of self-creative, making it very high culture. But it's very low culture because the quality is very bad on average. And these two are kind of like structurally interlinked to each other. But this relates to how in the age of the internet, things which used to be in great scarcity, especially in pre-modernity and then the modernity that became semi-scarce, have become basically infinite. We've become post-scarcity in these things. For instance, you know, if you were in the 18th century and you wanted to listen to some music, either you'd have to bang out the instrument yourself and crack on, or you'd be paying someone a lot of money to come round and do it for you. But if you wanted to listen to music just right there and then, it wasn't really possible. In the modern age, we got to a point where, you know, you could just put your record on, you could put your cassette on or whatever. And then in our postmodern age, we've got to a point where you can just listen to infinite amounts of music for free. Just of everything, ever. Music is completely, in this way, completely post-scarcity. There's an infinite amount of it. And this is why these companies have to take like strange paths to kind of monetize it. Where like basically on Spotify or YouTube, you're paying for convenience basically and for a lack of advertisements. It's quite interesting how advertisements function these days, where in large parts they exist to annoy you. Yeah. As opposed to tempt you into buying a product, where instead, like, they've basically an interruption which you can pay to avoid.
Yeah, no, it's literally just like, hey, do you remember that thing that we told you about 5 minutes ago? And I think,
I swear, like, on Spotify, like, it is psychological warfare because they'll play the same incredibly annoying advert twice in a row. And I'm convinced it's literally like they're attacking me.
Yeah.
I'm being assaulted.
So Hadron of Theseus brought up, why has the UK produced so many great novelists and poets, but relatively few great composers and painters? And, you know, I would argue straight off the bat for that, probably a resource thing, right? Like pen and paper or ink and fucking whatever, ink, quill and parchment. It's probably significantly less expensive than maintaining an instrument. So straight off the rip, that's what I would go with. I mean, unless, of course, you're talking about graffiti artists, in which case, plenty of those.
Did you see this thing just today where in New York, I think there's various ones of these going on right now, where there'll be a shop, and then the person on the counter will be there on a screen and they're like in the Philippines. Like the cashier is in the Philippines.
Yes. No. Yeah. I have seen this. Yeah. I'm trying to think where I'd seen it. I'd seen it a while ago on Twitter, I believe. But it was, yeah, the similar idea where it was like a remote teller that was working in like some country where they didn't have to pay them as much, essentially. Which, I mean, to be honest, personally, if they can do all of the functions that a normal cashier would be able to do, why the fuck not? Like, I've been saying this for a while, that, like, a lot of jobs should be remote.
They can't leave me with milk, can they?
I mean, put a set of wheels on it and fucking remote control and you're all set to go. A lot of jobs should be remote that, like, aren't. Like, a lot of these office jobs, like, companies that do like outsource a lot of these communications, like why the fuck do they have offices, right? Apart from to seem more legitimate.
Well, it's also kind of like a thing of control, right?
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's exactly it. And it, I mean, personally, it doesn't work on me.
You know, it's also like kind of a lot of office work jobs exist not because they need to, but because of like for the prestige of the senior person.
Yeah.
Where they want to have underlings which they can direct to do stuff. And obviously that sucks if they're like at home and they're not in the office. Yeah. I don't want to direct my peons on Zoom. I want to physically direct them.
Yeah, that's the problem. It's like, yeah,
they,
no.
They can't get any coffee if they're at home, can they?
True.
No, but I mean, with innovations, I'm past saying they're good or bad. They just exist and I'll live.
That's fair. I personally think the work from home, like that's what I say was probably the best part of COVID. The fact that it really made a lot of these companies realize that, like, having this office is a fucking waste of our time. Like, we'd be better off just hiring these people at home, have them work off their own machines. Then we're not spending money on fucking computers. We're not spending money on internet. We're not spending money on rent. We're not spending money on utilities. Like, it seems like a no-brainer to me.
Was there anything else you wanted to say? We've hit an hour.
I think that morality in terms of fiction is rather strange. But yeah, no, it was... see? Fucking based, man. No, like...
Yeah, I loved walking from my grandma's house to Fakey 13's house. Because I didn't want to get on the bus in case I came back and killed my grandmother.
Well...
Which, to be clear, we live like 6 miles away from each other.
Yeah. If I'd have been driving sooner, it wouldn't have been a problem.
No,
yeah, Harry Potter is immoral. Harry Potter is immoral because wizards are demonic.
I think Harry Potter is such a good example because the only difference between something like The Cursed Child and The Crimes of Grindelwald, like these basically fan fictions, which are just approved and produced by the people who own the copyright, there's no difference between them apart from money and rights.
Yeah.
The difference between any, like, and you can't say, oh, it's because they're better, because they aren't.
Yeah, true.
Like, they're really quite bad. There's plenty of fan fictions which are better than them. Obviously, I mean, The Cursed Child, as a script to read, it's very bad, but people say in theatre it's very good. But, I mean, I obviously can't say anything about that. But The Crimes of Grindelwald, it was shit. the difference between that and any other Harry Potter fan fiction that's derived from the major seven books is just money and rights, that's it.
I guess another funny point about that was that, like, a lot of Harry Potter people then became very enthralled in the Johnny Depp Amber Heard thing.
Right, yeah. That's amazing because, yeah, Grindelwald ended up being played by three different guys.
Yeah, during the series.
It was only three films.
It's like, how are you going to pick that badly twice? Like, oh, well.
All right. Well, where's my thing? Okay, I'm going to play the outro.
Well, it's been fun. Goodbye, chap.
Bye. Where is it? I've lost it.
Ineptitude at its finest.